You have tuned in to Open Mic on CJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Hello, hello everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to CJSF again. As you may recall, my name is Iago, and today we're broadcasting from the traditional and unceded territories of the Coast Salish people, including the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Coquitlam, and Khaltse nations. Unceded means that these lands have never been surrendered, sold, or given up by these nations that are currently situated on occupied territories. And with that appreciation in mind to be here today, I'm inviting you all to listen to a segment with me today about federal elections. So, having in mind discussions that are going on surrounding identity, politics, today I have here an episode on how are the politics of choice shifting in Canada right now. We're going to be diving into intersections of nationalism, diaspora representation, and emotions in this year of elections. And also from the shadow of Trump's algorithm campaigning, we're also talking about a little bit from a personal side of view on how things are going on with the voting shifting in the last month. So, joining us is Dr. Daniel Hadi. He's a professor here at SFU, expert in media, migration, identity, and also with really good insights into transnational media, cultural narratives that shape public opinion. So, Dr. Daniel is going to be helping us to unpack the forces behind today's political polarization and what it means for the future of civic belonging here in Canada. This is going to be the first interview, about 40 minutes that you can follow up with us. And just after that, we're going to be discussing a little bit of the environmental town hall that happened on not this Saturday, but the one before, that had with us representatives of Coquitlam, Port Coquitlam, and also Port Moody. So thank you so much again for listening to CJSF. To start this episode, we're going to be listening just to some music on the summer vibes. You have the honey smell in the air. So this is Summertime Voodoo by Lizzie Dissolved.
Stuck waiting for the 99 Sky train B-roll noisy sample to life. Smoked up behind the venue. She's feeling weary-eyed in a rental tux. This time. Box full of flowers.
radio. I stopped to write this down, but the smoke just burns my eyes. And I think of you and I, but oh my, my. It's just me and I. It's just me and I. Oh, this time, this time, this time.
And we're back. This was Summertime Voodoo by Lizzie Dissolved. And as briefly mentioned before, now we have an interview with Dr. Daniel Ahadi about media identity and the politics of choice and shifting Canada. So if you have any questions, always feel free to just message or text 778-782-2573. And remembering, this is a personal... we are expressing our own voice right here. This is everything that's going to be talked in this podcast. It's not a reflection of CJSF point of view or stand when it regarding today's election. So it's just Dr. Ahad's personal opinion on how things are happening and also mine. So, yeah. So first of all, I would like to officially thank you for taking the chance of talking to us about the Canadian elections. There's a lot to discuss. There's about on how the media is being covered. I know that you, Dr. Daniel, you have a lot to say about this. So I would like to take the opportunity and welcome you to CJSF.
Thank you so much.
Would you like to make a brief introduction of yourself about your classes, your courses, your expertise?
Sure, I can give you a brief overview. So I teach in the School of Communication and specifically to the topic today on election. I teach a course in fourth year on media influence, and we do talk about the election a lot and sort of the Canadian political system and how people might vote in elections. And sometimes we focus on national election, other times it's provincial or municipal election. So it really depends on the semester I teach the course and whether there is a, and usually there is an election happening or, you know, around the time I teach the course, typically there's an election taking place. And in some years we focused on the U.S. election. So it really, it really depends on the timing of when the course is offered.
Okay. And yeah, so to everyone listening, today we're going to be talking a little bit about media, identity, the politics of choice, in a shifting Canadian. We're in a space where we had last year as the year with the most elections in the world. So comparatively, we had a lot of new people elected for federal governments, and now it's time for Canada. And among that, we have a trading war happening. We have a lot of wars happening also everywhere, which shift a lot the way people think about their parties, their choices. And what I'm trying to bring here is just a little bit of this discussion on how people are shaping their identities, how they are shaping their votes based on everything that is happening around the globe, and how's that being communicated to everyone through media. So yeah, welcome to CJSF, everyone. And for the first question, I would like to focus a little bit more on what, of course, is the most trending topic during these elections, which is Trump tariffs, the trading war, Canada and the U.S., the relationship. And yeah, so considering that there is a lot of rhetoric, we know that the Liberal Party is using that as their one of their main campaigns. The same goes for the Conservative Party. And we have seen an increasing wave of protectionism, nationalism. Daniel, how do you think that economic nationalism and the proximity to the U.S. Political dynamics are shaping these Canadian elections, in your opinion?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think it's to answer that, we sort of have to go back a few years and think about where perhaps where we started off with sort of this notion of patriotism, as you mentioned, and this sort of feeling of rallying around the flag, using the flag as your sort of basis of identity. If I remember correctly, it was sometimes post-COVID when things started to shift ideologically towards a more nationalistic sort of outlook, where in Canada this backlash against the Trudeau government, that right around when things started to open up and after COVID, and I don't know if you recall this trend of the so-called Freedom Convoy that started in Canada, where there was a huge rally against the Trudeau government in it sort of started in various cities but sort of culminated in a huge rally in Ottawa. I think that's the first time I started to sort of really feel this pivot towards patriotism and nationalism and sort of this notion of Canadian identity that we sort of see today playing out in the election. And fast forward to say the current dynamics that we are facing, a lot of it is, of course, I don't want to say borrowed, but it's influenced by what's happening in sort of our neighboring country, the U.S. Whether it has to do with policies around immigration, labor. We've seen that we've seen how rhetoric against say immigrants and newcomers have also started to percolate and surface in a Canadian context. Now of course it takes different because the contexts are different, national contexts are different, we're not going to see this sort of exact same way as, like, you know, how patriotism manifests itself in the U.S. Is exactly the way it's going to manifest itself in Canada. But I think we are seeing some effects of that showing its face in a Canadian context. So let's start with that, and then, you know, I'll answer any other follow-up question that you might have.
Of course. And I think that the first time that comes to mind from what you're saying is the recent comments. Just for a purpose of your understanding, I'm Brazilian, so I know a lot of how nationalism is being shaped in Brazil. And there is one of the... it would be contrasted with the NDP party here. One of their main protagonists, Ciro Gomes, he came out to the media and he was like, yeah, we're seeing the same way the US and Canada are shaping their identity towards anti-immigrants for the purpose of rethinking how capitalism is working in there. Now we're seeing the same thing happening in Brazil. And I think that was an interesting comment because I have never thought about how, for example, what Trump is doing would directly affect how capitalism and more directly just how the identity politics are being forged in a way to cast votes that can be used towards a more productive country as they say it would. So based on that, based on the outcomes of such a shift in how things are looking and how you were mentioning since COVID, do you have any opinions or anything to say about the outcomes itself? What are the changes that will happen probably to Canadian politics and maybe even to the way people are casting their votes?
We got to look at it from a broader sort of socio-political and cultural perspective. I think one of the things that we've witnessed over the past decade or so, a heightened tension between the progressive side of politics versus the conservative side of politics. And the way, I mean, if you look at the trend, things have become increasingly polarized. And you can look at various topics, various issues, whether it's the sort of anti-Soji movement in Canada. If you recall, a couple of years ago when we were at the height of this, again, going back to this notion of freedom convoy, at the height of that, there was also this sort of Soji backlash against, teaching in K-12 on, sex ed, LGBTQ rights, trans rights, and the backlash against that. It showed a different face of Canada, a Canada that is divided between those voices that are more progressive, more tolerant, more inclusive, and more willing to accommodate, people's different identity markers, and then a Canada that wants to fall back on more conservative values that includes eroding some of the social rights and privileges that people have gained over the years, whether within LGBTQ community, trans community, immigrant communities. And that ideological war has sort of carried, like it's been carried through in other questions as well. The most recent and obvious one is around the support for Gaza. The war in Gaza and how the media also has played that in recent months, and the way in which then people either support one side over another. So that polarization has manifested itself on many different questions, and we see that also on our campuses, how that this ideological war has also surfaced in ways that people didn't think that campuses would become this political hotspot of ideological battleground, but here we are in the midst of it. So I think it goes beyond just the election itself. I think there is a cultural war that's happening across the board on various topics, and that inevitably affects the way elections are run. I heard on the radio today that Pierre Poilievre was announcing, that life sentence should actually be a life sentence in Canada, changing the criminal code to allow for judges to sentence people to sort of life imprisonment, multiple sort of sentences that would mean that they would stay in prison for the rest of their life. Again, depending on the severity of the crime, of course. But this sort of rhetoric of tough on crime, tough on immigration, and a revisiting of social rights of various justice-seeking groups. All these is sort of a continuation, a manifestation of all those, all these ideological conflicts that we've sort of witnessed in the past few years. So I think they're connected. to the election issue. And you can't look at the election without looking at what's going on at the cultural, social level when it comes to these ideological divides.
I think there's room for a lot of comments here, actually, coming from the rhetoric on basically how the identities are now being formed since the past 10 years and how those influence, even if I may call them small issues like on campus, I think there's a lot that can be discussed here. But I think I'll try what I'm planning on taking from all of your comments is just the tone and how, as you were saying, the cultural war is directly affecting the votes and people's shaping of mind. So I think that's maybe a little bit on this. Do you think that emotions are playing a big, emotions like fear, pride, nostalgia, they are being employed directly then because of it? In the during the political marketing, what is the relationship with the national and identity we're talking about, the Canadian values and we are Canadian message that is trying to be shaped by all parties?
That's a good question. One of the things that you're probably too young to remember, one of the things that really became a wedge issue in the election year that Trudeau was elected was when the previous Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, was using identity politics as a wedge issue. And he one of the references he made was a reference to old stock Canadians. And what did he mean by that, old stock Canadians? So at the time when he was running, he had been in power for about 10 years. And it had gotten to a point where the base of the Conservative Party, you know, that's all you needed at the time to get elected. So he was catering to the base when he was talking about old stock Canadian. And then he also used the hijab issue as a wedge issue at the time that, for example, women should not be allowed to wear a niqab when, for example, giving testimony in court. When you look at it, I mean, as a real issue, we're talking about a very small minority of the population that would even like consider, for example, wearing hijab or niqab in public. We're talking about a very small minority. But never mind that, as an issue that gets elevated in media and in political rhetoric, it becomes something that then ends up on the political agenda and on the political consciousness of people as an issue that is bigger than what it actually is. The strategy backfired. Of course, he didn't get elected based on, you know, that platform, partially also because, or probably more than partially, to a great deal he had to do with the fact that he had been in power for 10 years. But he was speaking to a specific demographic among the Canadian population that wanted to see a different Canada, or still want to see a different Canada, a Canada that is more insular, a Canada that is more homogenous and is more based on values of the old stock Canadians, of the white Anglo-Franco background Canadians. And I think the Conservative Party knows that and caters to that sentiment. And part of it is also playing on people's fear of the other, scapegoating as a technique, that you blame, you shift blame of what's happening in society to groups that perhaps either are, you know, not part of the Canadian fabric, they're transient, maybe they're visitors, you know, students, workers that are here temporarily. You start to develop a narrative, a sort of a blame narrative, and shift the burden to these populations. And what does that do politically is, you know, it creates, you know, it sort of widens the that base There are many immigrants, for example, among the voters who are, you know, the messaging that's coming out of sort of social conservatism, it resonates with them. You know, family first, Canadian values first. Even the anti-Soji, if you look at the footage from the sort of say outside schools when there were protests happening, you saw the sort of Freedom Convoy people joining forces with many immigrant groups to protest against, you know, sex ed in our K-12 system. So it's not as clear cut, sort of the white population against everyone else. It really depends on the topic itself that you're looking at. For example, like if you look at the
question I'm going to ask next to refers to looking at political identity fusing with broader community cultural ethnicity. So I was going to ask, is it intensifying polarization or creating space for coalition building between different people?
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it's political affiliation is not like a black and white matter. I think people vote based on issues a lot of time rather than thinking that whether they're fully conservative or fully liberal or fully NDP, you might, you know, think about the issues that you care about and vote accordingly. I think that happens with any group, including the immigrant groups. One of the frustrations working with, you know, ethnic communities, so-called ethnic communities, over the years has been, you know, this notion or this misguided notion rather that, you know, there is a such thing as an ethnic vote. You know, previous interviews that I've typically given around election time on how ethnic communities vote, there is this underlying notion that there is such a thing as an ethnic vote and that ethnic communities sort of, you know, vote as a block. And that's really not the case. I mean, even when we look at, you know, how various ethno-racial groups vote, it can really reflect the issues and the topics that they're interested in, that they care for. And some of them will vote more progressively and others will vote more conservatively. So it's not to say that all ethnic communities will vote in a certain way, or even all the members from one specific ethnic community will vote the same way. No, I think that's a misguided notion. However, I think the political establishment treats like ethnic communities as a voting block. For example, the notion that ethnic communities are socially conservative and they will vote on topics that may, you know, cater to that belief. One of the things that the Conservative Party did in the previous elections was running, and this is prior to the legalization and the decriminalization of marijuana, the Conservative Party were running ads in ethnic media against this, you know, policy at the time. And it was pure fear mongering. You know, these ads would say, you know, if you vote liberal, then they're going to bring, you know, drugs into your communities. They're going to be dispensaries at every corner. And, you know, based on that, you know, vote conservative. It's a simplistic view of how ethnic communities think and vote. And, you know, it's not... certainly the reality is not like that. The ethnic communities are as complex as, you know, mainstream non-ethnic communities, and people vote based on